From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The advocacy group Public Citizen has just published a white paper on the impact of the pandemic on a nation that has no national health system. According to its authors, hundreds of thousands of deaths and millions of infections would likely have been prevented had the U.S. enjoyed a Medicare for All system. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington has just reintroduced her Medicare for All bill that would expand the program currently enjoyed by those 65 years of age and older to all Americans. This is what she had to say on Wednesday.
I am thrilled to share some great news with you. Today, I officially reintroduced the Medicare for All Act into the House of Representatives. With half of the entire Democratic caucus proudly signing on as original co-sponsors, we are moving one step closer to finally guaranteeing health care to everyone as a human right. That means comprehensive care benefits for everyone with no co-pays, no private insurance premiums, no deductibles, and no hidden fees that private insurance companies love to sneak in there. We all know that our healthcare system is beyond broken. 87 million people were uninsured or underinsured even before this pandemic hit. Now, millions more are unable to see a doctor or afford their prescriptions because they lost their healthcare when they lost their job. That's just wrong. And on top of that, millions of people are drowning in medical debt that they will never be able to pay off. Medicare for All changes all of that. It means everyone in, nobody out. It means a healthcare system that finally works for you, not for the big corporations, not for big pharma. And it means a country where healthcare really, truly is a human right.
That's Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal on her Medicare for All bill that she just reintroduced into the House. My guest is Paul Song. He's a board-certified radiation oncologist and president of the California chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program, and he's also our healthcare correspondent. Welcome back to the program, Paul.
Always great to be back.
So first, let's talk about this report that Public Citizen put out that really seems to provide the perfect justification for reintroducing Medicare for All. It's actually quite shocking to think about the fact that we might have saved hundreds of thousands of lives. We're now at well over 500,000, half a million deaths here in the United States from the coronavirus. What do you make of this research and the fact that we really lost this opportunity in not enacting this program years ago?
Well, Public Citizen really did a good job of highlighting. Actually, the research was done by the Lancet Commission, which is a highly reputable group in the United Kingdom. And they really concluded that roughly one third of all the deaths in the United States due to COVID were in people that didn't have insurance, and that 40% of this could have been avoided if we had a universal healthcare system like the other 25 industrialized nations. And really, you heard several lies that were perpetuated during the Democratic primary that really COVID exposed. The first one was then Vice President Biden using the example of countries like Italy and elsewhere. At that time, they had much higher death rates than the United States, to basically say this is what happens when you have a universal healthcare system. But since then, the death rate has escalated exponentially in the United States, whereas those countries that have had a universal healthcare system did an amazing job of controlling death rates. The second thing that you heard was you heard Senator Klobuchar slam Bernie's bill as saying you're going to kick all of these people, millions of people, off their employer-sponsored healthcare. And yet we had up to 22 million people when they lost their job, they also lost their employer-sponsored healthcare. So you have a lot of these sort of lies that were really exposed by COVID. And unfortunately, when you look at the frontline workers, the people that were working in the grocery stores, waiting tables, cleaning houses, many of them were uninsured. And this just further illustrates why a safety net system that we currently have is not safe, because too many of these people do succumb to their illnesses. So if we had a Medicare for All plan, in place before this pandemic, nobody would have lost their insurance because they lost their jobs. And we probably would have had a far better overall success in reducing deaths in the United States.
Now, those who, you know, might argue against what this paper suggests might say, well, treatment for COVID-19 was covered by the federal government. So just because somebody did not have insurance didn't mean necessarily that they would have gone without treatment, which in and of itself is sort of hypocritical, because then if you're unlucky enough to get, you know, something like cancer, but you're uninsured, you're out of luck. Still, setting that aside, what Public Citizen pointed out was that it was our infrastructure that's based on a for-profit revenue-based model that was unable to handle the huge influx of patients needing treatment, not necessarily the fact that there were uninsured people getting ill that couldn't pay for it, right?
Absolutely. And if you look at the way our hospitals have grown so powerful by consolidation, they really focus on building out those parts of the hospital that they consider profitable. So maternity centers, outpatient surgery centers. But as far as taking care of our really the sickest of sick, as far as building out ICU capacity, investing in ventilators, investing in critical care monitoring, most hospitals were underfunded and underprepared for this. So as a result, when you had all of this groundswell of people that required ventilators, there weren't enough. When you had people that required ICU beds, there weren't enough, particularly in the low-income disadvantaged communities that didn't have the ability to really expand to meet the needs. And what happened? Then you had people like Governor Cuomo mandating that these people go to nursing homes that were also ill-equipped, and that further led to death. So all of this is very interrelated. I would add that if you look at most of the hospitals that are in the poorest communities, they, prior to the pandemic, had very few critical staff to handle respiratory illnesses and the things that ultimately COVID exposed. So all across the board, this just exposes what's wrong with our for-profit healthcare system.
And the day after Pramila Jayapal reintroduced her Medicare for All bill, the Senate narrowly confirmed Javier Becerra as Secretary of Health and Human Services. Javier Becerra, of course, you and I are quite familiar with, having been a politician here in California, who at least once said he supported a Medicare for All system. That, of course, then became the basis for opposition from Republicans. But does his confirmation as HHS secretary bode well for the prospect of enacting a Medicare for All system, maybe at least at the state level?
Absolutely. So now Secretary Becerra has been very public in saying that he thinks states should be afforded waivers. So now that he has the ability to do that, I think he should work very closely.
And explain that. What do you mean by waivers?
So as part of the Affordable Care Act, there was a provision that was written in that after several years into law, states could apply for a federal waiver, basically to apply for the money that they would normally get for either Medicaid, Medicare, and other SCHIP and things, to use that money to set up their own state-based healthcare system if it at least met the standards that were determined by the Affordable Care Act. So states like California could then take that money and now create their own single-payer system that, as long as it met the basic conditions of the Affordable Care Act and went above and beyond, they would be allowed to do that. But you always had governors that were sort of hiding behind this, saying, oh, we could never do it because we don't have a waiver, because when President Trump was in office, obviously that was less likely to happen. Now that you have a Health and Human Services Secretary who has been very much in favor of the waivers, saying that he would sign off on one, hopefully he will be able to grant one to the state of California, and then Governor Newsom can then say, okay, let's move forward. Because Governor Newsom has been using this as a little bit as an excuse on why not to do it. Ironically, when he was first inaugurated, the first day of his inauguration, when we had President Trump in office, he immediately asked his secretary to file an application for a waiver to get one. But now that we have Democratic elected President Biden, he didn't do the same type of waiver application right away. So how much of this?
And we've seen this before in Democratic controlled California, when we've had the chance to enact single payer. Democrats have basically pretended that it wasn't an important issue. But then when we've had Republican governors, they've made a big noise about it, knowing that it would be vetoed.
Absolutely. And so we'll see whether or not now that you have Secretary Becerra being more than willing to do this, whether or not that will really show Governor Newsom's real support for this or not.
So on the national level, there's the potential for a Medicare for All bill. And on the state level, depending upon whether the states want to apply for waivers, there's a potential to do it. I imagine that if states were to start doing this, that it would hopefully give some more impetus for the federal level program. I mean, if we think about the fact that Americans 65 years of age and older are already enrolled in this program, and expanding it to all Americans wouldn't suddenly change it from being a government-run program that works great to some nightmare of a, you know, some socialistic nightmare that's going to be opening the door to whatever dystopian horror Republicans think it will. Many of them have the money to purchase private insurance and or are old enough to have Medicare. Another thing that hasn't gone quite noticed, Paul, but I'm sure you've probably noticed it, is that the American Rescue Plan actually ended up being a big giveaway to private insurance companies, right? Of course, it's being cast as helping lower premiums because it boosts the Affordable Care Act. But Democrats are only too happy to give money to private health insurance programs.
Absolutely. It's actually a big giveaway to the private insurance industry. One example is for those people that lost their jobs through their employer-sponsored health care who then were eligible for COBRA. And COBRA is basically when you can buy insurance from your employer, even though you've lost your job. It's much more expensive than when you got your health care through your employer. But that is that many people can stay on this COBRA plan for up to a year. Now Congress has mandated that anybody who's lost their job, the government will pay for their COBRA coverage at least through September. So again, that's money that's just going to the private insurance industry. And it begs to question, why not, instead of spending all that money out there, why not say to anyone who lost their job during this pandemic and lost their healthcare coverage that you would automatically be enrolled in Medicare until you found your new job? It just it seems like that would have been a simpler and more economical way. But again, this shows you the power of the private insurance lobby.
Biden famously said about a year ago that if he were to be president and a federal Medicare for All bill were to pass the House and Senate, that he would veto it, which, you know, in light of the year we've had, just seems shocking to even contemplate that he would do that. He hasn't really been held to account for that statement or been asked it again. He also hasn't had a national press conference yet. He hasn't had a direct press briefing as president. But I'm wondering if you think that he would keep to that promise.
I think right now, when you look at his closest advisors, the majority of them are much more interested in preserving and building upon the Affordable Care Act than even thinking about a Medicare for All. And when you look at this organization called the Partnership for America's Healthcare Future, they are built primarily run by former Democratic Senate staffers and people that worked for Hillary Clinton. They're not only opposing a Medicare for All bill, but they've already started to oppose the public option. So I think that just for President Biden to get a public option through is going to be challenging enough, let alone Medicare for All. But having said that, now that you have 109 members of the Democratic caucus, 14 committee chairs, this is not going away, and this is getting more momentum each year. And in much the same way that before, you had people like Joe Crowley in New York and Levin in New York that would vote against this, they've all been voted out by the AOCs, by the Jamal Bowmans, who for the first time, the entire New York delegation has supported Medicare for All. So I think this is showing you that the groundswell is there, the support continues to grow, but the only way we're gonna do this is to get rid of the Democrats that stand in our way of this.
And of course, Bernie Sanders, who's been one of the champions of a Medicare for All system in the Senate, is now Budget Committee Chair. And nothing, of course, unless the filibuster is done away with, nothing can actually move in the Senate without significant Republican support. And unfortunately, it's very likely that there wouldn't even be enough Democratic support. But say there was enough Democratic support, could a Medicare for All bill, because it does involve budgeting and finance. And I don't know if you know about this, but can it be something that can be pushed through via a budget reconciliation process?
Thereby avoiding
the filibuster?
Right. It would have to get through the parliamentarian. But I think because you are inevitably going to raise taxes quite a bit, that perhaps that may be more difficult to do. I think the bigger challenge, to be honest, is this getting out of committee in the House. Despite the fact that I mentioned we have 14 committee chairs, you only have 109 members out of the 65 members of Congress, this is not likely to get out of committee. So while we should not be discouraged, we need to be realistic about where it stands. But each year, this gets stronger and stronger. So eventually, this will make it into the Senate.
So it seems as though just even raising it at a federal level is helpful to get the conversation going, to keep the dialogue moving. But then because of Becerra's confirmation as HHS secretary, getting it started at the state level might be the best way forward. You're president of the California chapter of the Physicians for a National Health Program. I am imagining that you and others are pushing Gavin Newsom hard at this point. Governor of California.
All right, well, so there's been a petition going on, and I would encourage your listeners to find that we've been trying to get the governor to file a waiver request within the first 100 days of this term. He's yet to do that. Obviously, he's got his hands tied with looking at a recall, but still, he ran on Medicare for All, and he was able to get his government to file a petition, waiver petition, within the first day of his first day in office. So he should be able to do that right now. But yes, there's a bill that's been introduced in the state of California, AB 1400. Ash Kalra is the primary, but there have been several co-authors. Unlike SB 562, which originated in the Senate, this is originating in the Assembly. And there is strong, a wide coalition support here in the state of California. We just need to have our elected officials really do the will of the people.
I mean, one of the things that keeps coming up over and over again is that you have just huge unemployment here in the United States. That is a direct case, makes the direct case for Medicare for All system, because all of those people are either uninsured or spending far too much money through the Obamacare health exchanges and really ought to have many more options. It stands in the way of people being able to switch jobs. It is the constant fear that people have hanging over their heads that if they are laid off, where will their health insurance come from, or where will they find the money to pay for health insurance instead of simply being able to join a government healthcare program. You know, there's the issue of uninsured people suffering during the pandemic directly from being ill, and then the issue of newly unemployed people simply not having health insurance. But the government, through its efforts in the pandemic, shows that when push comes to shove, it can spend money directly for people's healthcare, right? We spent taxpayer dollars on developing the vaccine. We're paying taxpayer dollars on dispensing, distributing, and giving people the vaccines. If you have health insurance, your health insurance pays for your vaccine. But if you don't, that vaccine is free to you, paid for by taxpayers. So they can do it.
Absolutely. And then in the end, when you think about where the government ultimately gets its money, it is from taxpayers. And we know that federally, 65 to 70 cents of every healthcare dollar that's spent on healthcare is paid for by us, the taxpayers. Either it's giving tax breaks to Apple and Google to provide healthcare to their employees, it's providing health benefits for seniors, it's providing healthcare for our federal employees or our state employees. It's just that we're already paying for it. We're just not getting the healthcare that we deserve.
Right. I mean, we could take all that money we're giving to private insurance companies and instead pour it back into the government to provide healthcare at lower costs. It would be nonprofit. I mean, there's all these carve outs for who gets to have coverage, government provided healthcare coverage, veterans, people over the age of 65, people on Medicaid, if you have certain disabilities, if you fall below a certain income, if you work for the government, but then all the rest of us, millions of the rest of us, somehow just aren't good enough to have this government provided healthcare. Another thing, another lesson we've learned over this pandemic is that when it is needed, the government can find trillions of dollars to pay for stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's ironic that if you look at the tax cut that was done under the Trump administration, it was $1.9 trillion, which is roughly the amount of this last stimulus bill. But how many people benefited from it under the last administration versus this one that's going to have profound influence in reducing childhood poverty? So many people are going to be lifted up as a result of this. So when government really is willing to do it and spend, the potential benefits are really, really numerous. And I think with regard to healthcare, I will say this, there's been a lot of studies done by independent conservative think tanks that if we don't do anything over the next 10 years, our healthcare system is only going to continue to go more and more bankrupt, and we're going to have less and less people insured, and they're going to have to cut benefits to seniors. Whereas even the independent think tanks like the Mercatus Institute found that the Sanders plan would end up insuring everyone, giving better benefits to everyone, and saving $2 trillion over 10 years. So the math is there. The moral argument is there. What unfortunately is still lacking is the overall political will.
So in addition to signing that petition that you had mentioned earlier, are there other things that individuals can do? I mean, there's a lot of unemployed Americans who I think would be very happy to have government not just send them a check in the mail once or twice or three times over the course of a year, but actually help pay for health care. I imagine that alongside some of the challenges that they face, that they're facing this sense of, forget about COVID, any other health issue that comes up is a threat, is something to be fearful of at this time of mass unemployment. If there are people who are listening in other states, do you recommend that outside California, that they also push their state legislatures and governors to obtain this waiver and at least get it started at the state level to have a single payer program?
Absolutely. So New York is pretty far along in their efforts to do this. And I would say this for all your listeners nationally, they should really look to at the co-sponsors of the Pramila Jayapal bill. And if their elected official is not on there, they should be calling in as much as possible to put pressure on them to sponsor this. That's the first thing they should do on the federal level. Here in California, people should really be sending letters and emails to the governor, calling the governor's office, asking him to sign off on a waiver request, and then look at their state assembly and state senators to make sure that they get behind AB 1400. But these are the things that I think people really need to do. And more politicians are listening as a result of Medicare for All being a fringe policy to now being a mainstream idea that is gaining traction each year.
Paul, thank you as always for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Always great to be here.
My guest is Paul Song, board-certified radiation oncologist and president of the California Chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program. He's also our healthcare correspondent. We've been discussing the latest push toward Medicare for All. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.